It's such a pivotal week, not just a incident this week. As we all know, violence against people of color have gone on for centuries on this continent in particular, and probably all continents on Earth. And so certainly the latest rising is only a bigger sore on a long history. And for AAPI's SE, they see, this has been going on really quite high since the pandemic started. So in that, I will say that what helped me to really settle and what I want to talk about three main things. So I'm going to talk about location, remembering, and extending. So when I was struggling with trying to really figure out, well, what am I going to do? It's so big. What Dharma points, being a Dharma teacher, of course, I was like, what Dharma points will be supportive? And I will say in general, in terms of the thing that comes up for me about these recent incidents is very much about safety, right? And of course, in the Buddhist practice, and by the way, I'm a Buddhist reverend, so I know that for many, this practice is not a religious one and not necessarily perhaps Buddhist based for you. And I will say that this is where it comes from for me. So I'm going to keep bringing it up and take what you can from it. However, at the end, if you convert and let us know, I get extra merit. Okay? Just a joke, of course, is a common joke I do. And maybe what that's why we should also say that this is the I think an important part so that the oppressors don't and the haters don't get us down is that we're complex human beings. And in the midst of grief and in the midst of sorrow and in the midst of pain, we are human, so we can laugh and we can cry. I'm also here with my partner. I'm not at home. I'm in Florida because her father recently died. Yeah, grief is a complex thing, and as human beings, we want to be able to hold the complexity of being human. So when I was thinking about the Dharma, of course, the main thing is about the precepts, right? The precepts are guidelines of behavior and how do we live with each other. And when most people think about when we take the precepts, which of course being ordained, I have several times, that we do it so that we live within a certain set of values, right? The main one being not killing, not stealing, not engaging in sexual misconduct, not lying, and not engaging in clouding of the mind, or more classically framed as intoxicants, right? So those are the main ones. And so part of that is the how do we practice with them, not only as a way that we live a certain sense of values, right? But really, the part that it seems to me in the West is less emphasized is that in doing that, we actually then provide, we're known as people who can provide protection for others. And when you think about it, it makes sense, right? When you know that someone has a certain set of values and they've publicly, that's what taking the precepts, it's always a public event, and then they've publicly taken it, then you have a sense that, oh, this is a safe person. You know, within, of course, we're human beings, so we're not, you know, we're not perfect. And in general, when someone has publicly say, these are my values, and I'm letting you know, and in fact, the public ceremony is also, I'm asking you to support me. And so there's this mutuality of I vow to practice to be a safe being and to engage in the world in a safe way. And the vow is also that I'm opening myself, that you know that the condition for safety is strengthened here, right? Safety is not a set thing, as we all well know, because of impermanence, right? And so how is it that we practice to let each other know? Right? And so one way is to know our location, right? And so when I remember that my location as a Dharma teacher is to provide a container in which you can practice, then that helped me to settle, right? Not just like, what information about the Dharma am I going to get out to you? Well, that's useful. To me, what's most important is how do I provide a container that we as a Sangha live together in this hour and a half? How are we going to live together? Because how we experience a way of living together that's held by the values of non-harming, the values of wisdom and compassion in this hour and a half, then it ripples out from here as we go from here. How many of you, when you leave this event or similar event, you feel more settled and maybe even smile and are nicer to other people? Come on, admit it. Huh? Yeah. So we do this. We do this to give ourselves nourishment, right? To remember location, remembering that this is something that not is only inside us, but it's a shared value. So there's a community and that we do it together. And then we extend that. We extend that as we go from here. So let us go into the meditation. And I'm given everything. I'm going to do a 20-minute meditation. All right. And if that brings you any discomfort, I apologize. I want us to have more community time, and we are going to do it. So we can do a 20-minute. Mako, as I said, I'm not home, so I forgot my bell. Emiko will ring the bell 3 times to start and 1 to end. In my tradition, that's how it goes. All right, here we go. 3 bells. All right, take a moment to find your position, your location in a meditative posture. Really, it is a location. What is the location on the seat, the cushion, the ground? If you're sitting on a chair, cushion, standing or lying down, perhaps even walking. Any position that gives you a sense of being connected and a sense of stillness, even if it's in the midst of movement. And this is because grounding and stillness supports us to connect to just those two qualities, groundedness and stillness. And these qualities support being present. And because the body is always present, I invite you to connect to a posture point or a breath point. Find an easeful one. No haves or shoulds, if possible. Your body knows how to sit, lie, or stand, or walk. And it knows how to breathe. So connect to one of those points in the activity. And let that connection be one that isn't a struggle. And when the world is presenting, when we see the world, when we're experiencing the world, as difficult, as diseaseful, as scary. And when we have a sense of our internal world also as those qualities, when we're struggling, I'll share with you the story that the Buddha, as he was sitting, remember the Buddha is an actual person, right? As he was sitting to attain enlightenment, he was struggling. In different tradition, it was 7 days or 49 days. I've even heard 49 years. Anyway, it was a long time, and so of course there was struggle. And as he was struggling, he had a memory of a day when he was a child, when he was Siddhartha, a prince, and his father being a king, took him out of the palace to go to a farm to be part of a spring celebration in which they were plowing and planting. And this is the time of the equinox for us. So there is a sense of spring in the air. So imagine that as this. And I invite you to visualize, if you want to, what I'm sharing. So as in any celebration, it was a busy time and a lot was happening. And in the late afternoon, being a prince, he had attendants and also young. I think it was 8 or 9 or 10. His attendants got busy and he found himself having been placed under a rose apple tree in the shade on this warm spring day. And it is said that in a very natural way, he connected with a sense of subtleness and composure of a heart and mind that felt contented and free. Free from wanting, from rejecting, and confusion, and ignorance. That's the classic. What I would propose to you today that perhaps it will also a sense of safety and undefendedness. There's a reason they live in palaces and castles, right? So there's a sense of, and then just like now, nations fought each other. So I would propose to you that there was also a sense of safety. This is totally my take on it. And I think it's appropriate for the conditions we find ourselves here. So working off of this, I would like to invite you to find a moment to remember a time, a location in which you know safety and protection. A moment in your life that was content, safe. Perhaps like the Buddha under a tree, your favorite tree that you climbed or sat under, someplace in nature, perhaps in the arms of mother, father, or the lap of a grandparent, or with friends and family or community. Wherever it is that you can connect to in your memory, Right? A sense of well-being, sense of safety. And let that safety now, the story of it, the memory of it, I'm going to invite you to let it land on a body point. Probably by the end of that sentence, that invitation, wherever it land, let it be a good enough place. If it doesn't feel good, then let it move and trust. Really feel it in a very visceral way, in a body point. And the reason for that is the body is always present. It could be a breath point. Wherever it is in the body, at the posture of the breath, that you can connect to the sense of safety. And I'm going to be quiet as you either really expand on that sense of knowing deeply, the different sensations or the quality of breath. Or you keep coming back to that if there isn't a sustained way. Neither is better. Just the invitation is to keep on touching and or sustaining. This is a really useful effort of concentration to place your attention and sustain the awareness as nourishment, as a knowing that's not intellectual, not that that's wrong, just a way to connect in a very visceral way, safety and contentment. And if there are any body issues right now, and it's hard to stay with the body or the breath, and the invitation is to perhaps touch the earth with your hand or your foot, and let the earth, your sense of the earth, be the grounding. Let yourself find and connect with any sense that would give you a sense and a memory that's very visceral of well-being and safety. I'm going to go ahead and share the second part of invitation in this meditation. And then when I'm done, you can use one or the other or move from one to the other. So from this place, this knowing of safety and well-being, and that very felt sense of it, I want to invite you to extend it just as similar to if you've done any of the Brahma Viharas, Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Pekka, goodwill, compassion, inclusive joy, or equanimity, or flexibility, or resiliency. So in those practices, remember that, again, ease when it's a body is really important, because the important aspect is to strengthen our knowing, our confidence, and our trust that the qualities is what's true. And so today we're connecting and getting confidence and trusting our sense of well-being and safety. So you have established a sense of that in yourself. And if you haven't, then don't move on. It's okay. And when you do, and you can move on and you can move back. So first, let's say you have that. Right? And let's say that mine actually feels right in my chi area, that area just below the belly button, the life force. This is where I can have a sense of connectedness, of well-being, and safety. Or perhaps for you, it's the heart space. Perhaps for you, it's that hand that's touching the ground. From whatever point works for you, you can extend it. Right? The same qualities or sense that you feel. It doesn't have to be by words. It can just be a feeling. You can extend in the classic categories of the Brahma Viharas, from yourself to a good friend or benefactor, to a neutral person, to difficult persons or people, to all beings. Or you can extend it by person in the square next to you when we were saying hi. Then to everyone in this Zoom room, or perhaps everyone in the building that you're in, then the neighborhood that you're in, then the state, then the country, then the continent, then the world, then all beings. Perhaps it's if you're having, let's say, difficulty just knowing it for yourself, you can also practice the extending. Let's say it's hard to experience safety except for that hand touching the ground. What would it be to extend that, feeling it coming up the arms, then the shoulders, then the torso, then radiating in whatever way that works for you? So the invitation now is to both connect to a felt sense of well-being and safety. And then at your own pace, and there's no should, right? Bigger is not better here. Larger is not better here. No supersizing necessary. Just a matter of what feels possible and true to extend this feeling of well-being and safety internally and externally. And as we're coming to the end here, know that if each one of us is extending, then certainly 68 other are sending you well-being and safety. So let that in. Let that in to support you and sustain you. Let that in to nourish you. And then the last few breaths, I invite you in any way that this works for you to really perhaps say to yourself, I am the nature of well-being, safety is here, I am protected. And then a broad you, or you can say all beings, or we can say we. Well-being is us. Safety and protection are present. Let this be true. Let this be known. And let this be provided to all beings. All right, thank you, everyone. Yeah, in this tradition, we just end with one bell. Thank you. Or my tradition, I should say. And if it was unclear, I'm in the Soto Zen tradition of Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. I'm going to speak a little bit today. And then I want most of the day to be us interacting with each other. And again, I'll just remind people that as we go into breakout groups later at the end of the Dharma component, you're invited to self-identify as Asian American Pacific Islander or Desi. And please put the asterisk in the front because it's hard to see all the way to the end, or at least for me, I don't. And we'll go into breakout rooms in groups of three. Of course, you can pass. Okay, I see a hand raised. So in Buddhism, first we take refuge right in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The Buddha as a human being, as an example of a human being who has attained enlightenment or awakening. The Dharma is the teachings of Buddhism. That also means the base root of the word Dharma or Dhamma also means nature, as in capital N, nature. So the Dharma also is not just the teaching, but the naturalness as framed by Buddhism. And then the Sangha, the community of practitioners. So in answer to your question, I think you knew this in what you're saying, Meske, is that the three marks of existence, by this the three kind of laws of how life is for conditioned being, which all of us are, is that there is impermanence. Things come and go. Things are not solid. Things are not enduring. And then one is dukkha, which usually is translated as suffering. You can also translate it as dis-ease, dissatisfaction, and discontent. You say also like overwhelmed. Overwhelmed is a dukkha. By the way, there in dukkha, there's dukkha is natural, right? Notice these are the naturalness of life. So we're not trying to get rid of dukkha. We're trying to work with dukkha. And how can we reduce our experience so that it isn't a different way of framing it, false dukkha or extra dukkha, you could say, right? I'm in Florida, and recently I saw, I'm not kidding you, an emergency vehicle that said, life is suffering on the side. I was like, oh, I even took a picture, but I can't find it right now. And then the back, you know, the two doors in the back of a van, right? And then it said, relief is optional. So in some ways you could say that's our practice. Oh, and the third, by the way, of the three is, most people translate it as not self, but excuse me, non-self, or has been translated non-self. I myself like to think of it as not self, which means that it doesn't have to be about you or about a self. By you, I mean this you or that you or other you, sorry. So it doesn't have to become solidify into a sense of identity. That's what it means, right? And so on a certain level, your question is the fundamental question of practice. We are practicing to see how is it that impermanence, to realize that impermanence is not a problem. How is it that in the midst of impermanence, we realize that everything is impermanent and that that is not in itself a problem? For instance, safety, right? Safety, if we understand that this is the law, right? And here's the difficulty of a practice that if one just drops in on, well, the invitation is to take what works for you. By that, it means what works for you right now in your understanding, right? But in terms of a system, you have to understand it as truths. And then as you practice, you start to understand, oh, is that truth really true? And how true is that truth? Does that make sense? Like, and in general, we can all say, oh, life is impermanent. Who here would disagree with that? But in life, there's impermanence, right? Nobody would disagree with it. So we understand that. Practice, Buddhist practice in particular, and I would myself would say Theravada practice in particular, really helps us to practice in a way that knows that. This is why in Theravada practice, there's a lot of sense of coming and going, understanding the pain in your knee has a rise and a fall. Right? When you watch your breath, it rises and it falls, gets deeper, it gets shallow. Mm-hmm. Your anger, if you have enough steadiness of being able to observe it, comes and goes. Hatred comes and goes. So our experiences comes and go. And so when we know that, then safety is not outside of that. Now, Here's the thing about when we know that, is that when then we also realize, oh, but also there are conditions that help us to know it in a way that what conditions make for that and what condition exasperate it. So it's one thing to say, right? It's one thing to say, oh, life is impermanent. Right? Safety is impermanent. But it's another to experience, to go, okay, well, since safety is impermanent, then, you know, your safety is not important. And so you need to be jailed or you need to be controlled. Right? Does that make sense? It's like if I'm aware that aging happens, right? I can either say, well, fuck that. Oh, excuse me, I'm not supposed to swear. I could either say, forget that, right? And I'm just going to smoke and I'm going to drink and I'm going to, you know, like just burn my skin off with as much sun as possible and, you know, forget it all. Or I can know that, oh, if I want not to protect my life, I'm going to eat junk food. I'm just going to like make it really hard for my body to have a naturalness, right? Have a course that has a sense of natural unfolding. And it's the same. You could overcompensate the other way. And then sometimes there are consequences to that, right? And so our life is this negotiation. How much effort goes towards holding, say, impermanence, holding safety in a sense that feels wise, and I feel a sense that I have some agency in it, while I'm holding that some of it I cannot control. Right? If you think that you can control your aging, and we know people that, most of us know somebody like that in our lives, or know it ourselves as we age, right? Sometimes we overdo things trying to not look like we've aged. And then, you know, we can suffer if then all of a sudden we find a gray hair or something, right? One time I woke up in the middle of the night and I went in and I was like, oh, look at that huge wrinkle across my head. And I don't know why. Maybe it was the middle of the night. It was just any regular night. I was like, oh, I am getting old. Look at that wrinkle. I just look like I'm worried all the time, right? And then I went to bed, back to bed, because it was the middle of the night, right? I woke up in the morning, first thought, I went in and looked, no line on my head. So our ideas about things are also impermanent, right? And we're taught, here's the key, we are taught about how we should respond to the naturalness of life. We're taught in the West, and in a lot of culture too, but I'll speak for the West because I live in the West. And it seems like a very big thing, right? About how women in particular should not show our age. Right? And so we internalize that. And so we can suffer from that. Which takes me to actually the main thing I wanted to talk about today, which is to see if I have time. We go to, apologies because I'm in a different time zone. So I have almost one. We go to what I'm calling 1:30 and you call 10:30. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. See, there's impermanence in ideas. Right? I live in San Francisco. I would have called it 9:30 or 10, whatever. 10 right now, almost 10, right? So things change based on conditions. So the thing I wanted to talk about is that I will say that when things are difficult, I was just saying this in my Access to Zen, my meditation group, and I meant to look it up and I forgot, so I'm sorry, but someone had brought up, and I think this is Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee says, when there's a crisis, we fall to the, not to the level of a higher level, but we fall to a level of practice. We fall to a level of practice. When the shit hits the fan, we revert back to what we have been practicing. So as we have seen, when people practice hatred, when people practice greed, when they're in distress, they seem to think that that's going to make things better. And this is why practice needs to be cultivated, right? Practice needs to be cultivated. And our hearts and our minds has qualities of hatred, greed, and delusion. This is the human condition. And it also has the qualities of goodness, of compassion. Right? So a lot of practice is not just to be with things as they are, but to actually know wholesome, or skillful qualities, or better yet, to know wholesome qualities, and then to have the skills to be able to stay connected to that when things are difficult. So one set of ways in which to work with that is what's called the Eightfold Path, which is part of the Four Noble Truths. Who would like to either write in chat or say, what is the first Noble Truth? If you're not, okay, is there a chat? Does that mean someone did? No, that's a different one. All right, should I just, what was, oh, there is suffering. Okay. Two, what is the second noble truth? These are the truths as understood in all the sects of Buddhism. And this is the fundamental basis of Buddhism. There is a cause. Okay? All right, thank you. All right, this one, right? All right, and the third, what is the third noble truth? This one's really important. The end of suffering. Okay. Fourth. I already said it. Path. The Eightfold Path. Just FYI, classically in the old way, the fourth noble truth is simply practice. And then a while later, it became the Eightfold Path. So, and what is, let me say these first. So that is the classic. What you guys share is the classic. I will say that I have reframed them as what I call the Engage Four Noble Truths, which I'm going to share with you right here. Come on, you. Yeah. I had it all ready to go, but. Now I need everyone. All right, they are. And I will say that I came up with these as a way to work with when harm has already happened, right? And actually developed a while back when I was at a teacher's conference, a Buddhist teacher's conference, in which sexual misconduct was in the news. Sexual misconduct, again, we should say, was in the news, in the Buddhist community, was in the news. And so being teachers, we were doing workshops, and one was on restoration and an outside framing from a social worker. So pretty cool, since I'm a social worker too, called the Right Use of Power, if anybody knows that, was brought in, which is a good format. However, it started me thinking, what is a Buddhist one, right? So this is how I came up with it. So as a restorative model, it begins with hurt and harm is present. So we can certainly say that that is true in our experience right now. Would you not agree? We are experiencing hurt and harm. Okay? And I'll just share that a bit of a distinction I make between hurt and harm. Hurt is what I'm feeling. Harm are the conditions, the policies, the structures that create harm. Right? Doesn't mean I can't create harm, without a doubt, and it gives me much more the sense. So that's similar to many, many that you put as first noble truth. And by the way, these are classic truths, so I'm not saying I've redone them in any way. I've reframed them, right? Let me share that. So the second noble truth then is that it looks similar, doesn't it? There are causes and conditions. And I want to emphasize the conditions part. And by the way, someone did say that clinging is the cause, and that is the classic teaching, that clinging is the cause. However, I would say that clinging comes from the word tanha in Pali, T-N-H-A, and classic. The etymology of tanha is thirst. And a better sense of understanding why clinging is a good word, I also would like to say obsessiveness or compulsiveness. So, for instance, desire, often people think is the cause of suffering. Desire itself is not a problem. Like desiring to practice, that's not a problem, right? But when you're obsessive about it and you might engage in behavior that hurts and harm, then it becomes a harmful quality. And so one way to understand it is to say, what aspects about these things have I learnt? Right now, the thing about that things are learned. So I focus much more on the second noble truth and these engaged framing as the conditions. This is my distinction between causes and conditions. Because causes sounds a little bit like just me or just my problem. And you could fight with me about that. I'll just say, for now, do not fight with me about this because we have a short time, but you can later. So the condition to me much more about the structures, the systems that have brought this about. So this is why we are learnt. Things that are reactions, right? That's another way to distinguish between what, again, some people, and by this I mean Charlotte Jokelbeck is one person I know who separate dukkha into true suffering and false suffering. So then if we use that framework of false suffering are reactive patterns that we have learned. As people of color, we could say internalized racism, right? What we've taught that we've internalized. Or it got internalized because we were told we better or else we would suffer literally, physically, or otherwise. So by internalized, again, see, here's the thing. I didn't internalize it. Condition forced me to internalize it. Oppression, white supremacy are the causes and the conditions, right? White supremacy is a cause, you could say, but the condition, how does that play out? What are the policies of white supremacist conditions? So then when we have a sense that it's learned or that it was taught to us consciously, unconsciously, and as systems, not just from our family or just from school, but, well, school is a system, but also governmental, then how is it that we can unlearn or relearn? Because I know as a person of color, right, often when I was hurting about racism, I was so confused, like, I just don't get it. Why is this person so mean to me? And I don't see the cause, telling me to go home, right, calling me names. I don't understand. Strangers, I've done nothing wrong, I think. And so I keep saying, what's wrong with me? What's going on? But when I can understand, by this I don't mean people should, mind you. I just mean by when I could see, oh, it's the oppressive system of racism that teaches that it's okay, especially in the current, until very recent, right, political regime, that it's okay to say mean things and to say oppressive things to Asian Americans, then, or to have policies, right? I myself have heard from Asian American one-on-one, I usually live in San Francisco, that a lot of Asian people, you know, have been affected by COVID, and yet in the statistics, we don't show up. Right. So when we know that they're learned, then what is the agency? That's a third noble truth. How can we heal? That's another way to understand the third noble truth. How can we heal? Right. And when we heal, when we know that, and here's the hard part about healing. It's not just, and these are useful, right? Placing our mind in wholesome sense. That's what meditation is useful for. One part, but it's also seeing where did we internalize things? Where do we take things in that true past conditions made it so that we had to believe that, or we had to internalize that? And is it true now? Are our conditions true now? So I would say this about safety. You know, I'll tell you that so I'm in that house of my partner's father's house, and for a lot of reasons. Anyway, I was getting ready to take a shower before I came on, right? And she had gone out to go do something, and I had to make sure the front door was locked. Right? It's a gated community, very quiet, Sunday morning. And it reminded me so many times that I always, every night I check the door that's locked, if it's locked. It reminded me when the first time I lived on my own in a little apartment behind a house, right? Like had an own entrance, which I thought was a great benefit. I got a letter, handwritten. This is in Eugene, Oregon. Someone says, "You should not have moved into this neighborhood. I am watching you." I start to sleep with a knife under my pillow, right? Because to get to my entrance, you had to walk through a really narrow side of the house that was all bushes and dark, or an alley. So safety is something as a person of color we know really well, right? Or fear for our lives we know really well. So, but is it true now? This is what we need to say. I think it's okay to go lock the door, mind you. And there's some part of me that goes, there is a safety now. And it took me immediately to that memory. And I'm sure it's because of all the things that's happening in the United States right now against Asian Americans. And then I have to remember, right now, in this place, I am safe. So this is why remembering where we are, our location right now, not to negate our past, not to negate that there is a system in the United States that does hurt us as people of color. And right now the sense towards Asian Americans seems really extreme and high. Not to negate any of that. And this is how we don't let hatred extend where it doesn't need to. Right? Is to remember right here and right now, the agency I have. And that the agency is not just a self-agency. It's an agency of community also. I'm with people who I know will defend me. I'm with people who I know I'm safe with. So, the important thing, the third noble truth, how we heal is where we have to remember where we have power and we have agency. And again, that agency is not just mine. That agency is also when we have solidarity, when we have allies, when we're with others. To be perfectly honest, this is my first time speaking at this group, you know, and I've had other interactions in which, you know, that might be white people working in different aspects. And so I was like, I really want to make sure this place is BIPOC only because to check on safety. And safety is complicated, without a doubt. Anne, are you still here? I know she had another event. She had an ordination.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I share just a little bit about what we were talking about the shame yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that safety is complicated. Do you know when Anne and I were speaking and yesterday about this, you know, and being who she is and knowing about location, about powers, my guess, and also just, you know, well, not wanting to take up space because I'm the teacher, right? She was going to have the statement of Spirit Rock be by Maria Christina or Emiko because they're the managers today or whatever the words you guys use. I apologize. That's a wrong word. Right? And then as we were talking, I was saying, you know, in this situation right now against the rise in the hatred of Asian Americans, of Asian, anti-Asian violence. There is this element that what we see, Also, we can't deny that that's true because of the way the policies have placed Asian immigrants, I know as an immigrant, into brown and black neighborhoods as we came. And so that well, maybe unconscious, but I think intentional, still in mind, right? Policies in which we are pitted against each other to stay in our little ghetto, right? Instead of moving out into white spaces because of the history of pitting us against each other. There's this really sense, right? That it, there's, there, I know with George Floyd, when I saw one of the cops, I was like, oh no, he looks Asian to me, right? And I know that many of us Asian Americans, I think, really came out in this last round of Black Lives Matter because of that. And then in this round, again, because of the way that white supremacy have worked, they have framed, Asian Americans as the model minority, as the, honorary white, sometimes you even hear. And so there's a sense that there's black on Asian, brown on Asian hatred. And so it's complex. And so there's shame in these instances where we have shame and we really holding this really complex sense, right? And I know in the other venues I've been to about this round of anti-Asian hatred that we've talked about solidarity. We understand, right, that we do not want to frame this as a people of color against each other, right? So in terms of when we can remember what we were taught, right, by oppressive system, how we were pitted against each other. So then our agency also includes reframing so that we can better understand and better work together. And as Anne, ended with asking, and this is part of it. We have not been given a lot of models of how to work together. Yes, we have. Yes, we have without a doubt, because this is not the first time. And we've had a lot, like Yuri Kochiyama and Malcolm X, right? A lot of interracial solidarity, without a doubt. And we do need in this community to work together to do that. And this is part of agency. And I meant to give you guys much more time, so I'm going to stop there. The Eightfold Path are skillful ways of viewing or understanding, which is essentially the Four Noble Truths and karma, by the way. Skillful thinking or motivation. So those are called the wisdom aspect. The next grouping is skillful speech, skillful action, and skillful livelihood. And that's called the ethical. This is the interactive. This is how we live together, aspect of the Eightfold Path. And then the last is skillful effort, skillful mindfulness, and skillful concentration. Three meditative factors, right? And often the meditative factors are considered the bridge between our values and our wisdom, right? Between how we understand the world, how we understand how karma works, right? Like the karma of racism in the United States. Right? And then how do we live together? Our meditative practices is a bridge between enacting our values and also how our actions support our values. So how we can be safe and how we can provide safety or protection. So what I like to do, and I know we don't have much time left, and I apologize. And I am also going to stay an extra 15 minutes. We had some sense that this might be needed. I'll stay 15 minutes after. I would like us to, and the reason that I wanted to do API DESI voices separate is that I think. If this was a time in which, say, after George Floyd, then I would have asked for African American or Black identified people to pair up, or when do triads, right? Just to give more space, more connection. So The reason for that is I think we have different experiences right now. And I think in this difficult time, that sense of solidarity needs to be varied, right? And so what I would like on a certain level is to raise API, they see voices. And so when you pair up with other AAPI, they see, I would like you to talk about either what is coming up for you, having heard about all these violence and hatred incidences, and or what you need now. I myself, as an Asian American woman, often find really hard to ask for what I need, how I would like to be supported. So from that place, from that location, I would encourage, if that's a challenging place for you, to take on that one. And then I think as this is what I, as an AAPI right now, would like is for non-AAPI, they see, to, and when you break up, to talk about how you would like to offer support, how you feel you can be in solidarity. Doesn't have to be complicated, doesn't have to be, right?
And so, since we're going over a little bit, Maria Cristina, is there anything that you'd like to me to do in terms of having people say goodbye to each other, et cetera?
No, you just kind of go with the flow.
Great.
I would say I loved the opening, and I was the one thing I was going to suggest is we get to say goodbye the same way.
Yeah. It was really sweet.
Well, really good. I mean, I went crazy. I just realized how important it was to see people. And, you know, acknowledge them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has the rooms closed completely? Because I know we lose people when breakout happens. So, okay, we're all back. Okay, so first, because of time, what I'd like to do first is for those who identify as AAPI and they see to, and you don't have to do this, is an invitation to in the chat, this way we can get many voices at once, to write in first what's up for you. And remember, you can either share just with me or you can share with everyone. And again, I'm framing it as, I know this is one of my habitual patterns when things are difficult, is to isolate and to withdraw as opposed to move forward and connect with community. And obviously you know that, or else you wouldn't be here. Or otherwise you'd be, you know, curled up in your bed probably. So I invite you to put that in the chat first, right? If you're AAPI, they see right in the chat what came up for you from the discussion, or if you chose to, go ahead and press send whenever you have. Okay. And if you have written to everyone, then I will just read a few of them. We are not alone in this, a softening and sadness after being furious all week, anger, despair, gratitude for community. All right, the next round, and others can come in and I'll read them, but Those who have written already, then the next round, AAPI, they cease, will write what you are, say what you need right now. Say what you need right now. And while you're doing that, I will read some more. Overwhelm, rage, grief, confronting my internalized, culturally multi-layered shame, feelings of uncertainty, belonging, a yearning to be in solidarity with others, especially those not like me. I'd love to invite AAPI. What does this mean? I'll say that in a minute. To support each other in action, doing events, return, blah, blah, blah. Comfort in finding community, nurturing self, naming emotions after grappling with fear, anger, disappointment all week, allies to step up. I think we're getting to what we want now. Because of whiteness, even as Indian grown up in Southeast Asia, the confusion of whether I belong Asian American when people who are hurt look like my closest friends. Space and conditions to grief with community, thankful to have the Sangha, need to belong. Okay, sad about Trump supporting family, so helpful to talk with other AAPI. All right, I'm gonna pause just for a minute because I'm gonna invite non-AAPI, Desi is a word for, it's a word for indigenous, but in general, indigenous of Southeast Asia, right? So non-AAPI, Desi's to write in how you're supporting us or what is your sense of solidarity around this issue. Emiko, I don't know if you know where I stopped, but at 1:30, can you read some of them so I don't have the reading?
No problem. Yes, absolutely. So I'll wait till more come in. So far we've heard from our, here we go, safety and solidarity. Feeling my grief at the murders and violence so I can be moved into action. Naming that white supremacy is not a binary of black and white. Also taking care of my own grief. Love. We must remember and live the reality of beloved community. White supremacy feeds on division. Building bridges for solidarity despite divisions.
I think I also saw space and time to care for body via somatic practices, connect, needing true curiosity and listening from others. I found myself tearing up hearing the others speak. Like it was okay for me to feel things about hearing about others feeling confused and angry. I have so much more compassion than I did for myself. Community and connection is so important. Across the board, rage, sadness, softness, kindness, realization that lived experience heals and separates. All right, so let's take a moment to... How about ringing us the bell, Emiko, 3 times again? From the meditation, or one you can connect to right now, perhaps hearing these words, perhaps having the interaction in small groups. And then again, really feel it in your body. it be a place that you can return to no matter the conditions outside. And I would also say inside, even the turmoil and the difficulty inside, is there a point, a posture, a breath? It can always be like a home spot, a safe spot. An enlivening spot. And then from that place, extend it. Through your body, and perhaps through the pores of your skin, or from your heart space, to each of us in this room, the Zoom room, and to extend. May the merit for practice today extend deeply in ourselves, going out into the world to others, especially those in need of well-being and safety. And also, as we know, that the wish for well-being and safety are known and wished for by many of us in the world. Feel it resonating back to you. Let it in. Let it nourish you. Right here in this location. Remembering it, centering it, and then extending it back and forth. And this is what we wish for all beings in the 10 directions. And the 3 times. Please ring the bell once. Very much. Tomorrow night at my group, this is in the practitioner resource guide. What is that? What it's called? Whatever it is. We will have a deep listening circle of AAPI voices. As BIPOCs, you're invited. And it's just purely listening to AAPI voices and sitting in solidarity. And then there are a few other resources in there. And then the other key one in terms of relating to this is the conversation tonight at IMS, and then at Spirit Rock, I and five other amazing teachers will be leading a course called The Dharma Being Anti-Racist, right? Accessing Skillful Engagement. It is based on the Four Noble Truths I talked to you about and the Eightfold Path in a very, it's a course that's based on both. We alternate between class and small groups that's broken into BIPOC affinity and white identify affinity. It is a class for everyone. And having worked in anti-racism for a long time, I will tell you that even though it's my course really in all the formulations, and I've been working on this with the support of a Buddhist foundation for almost 2 years now, I was skeptical if it could work for everyone, and I will say that having done this for everyone and for an AAPI group only, it really can work, and that is because it's based on these small groups, and then hearing other experiences, like someone wrote in the chat, right? Because racism hurts us all, and there's a wholeness of our being that white supremacy is wanting to tear us apart and causing rifts, and the more we know that and the more we understand our location in the system of white supremacy and how it doesn't have to be that way, how we can work to actively unlearn and relearn, how we can know our wholeness as beings together in this world and to live together. So I encourage you to sign up for that. There are scholarships, so please don't let that, don't let financial hardship be a burden. And I'll stay on a little bit after. So I think there's a few minutes, 2 minutes for anyone who has questions. Otherwise, I invite you all to unmute and say goodbye to each and all of everyone if you would like to.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.